Item 11, public hearing pertaining to horseshoe crabs.
This is a public hearing for proposed amendments to Chapter 4, VAC 20-900-10 pertaining to horseshoe crabs to establish mesh size, twine size, and permit specifications for gill nets harvesting horseshoe crabs. If you remember from last month, this was an issue that was first brought up at the March 25th, 2013 FMAC meeting. It was brought up during the public comment period by a member of FMAC, Ernie Bowden, who is also part of the horseshoe crab fishery. He was concerned that individuals fishing for horseshoe crabs with large mesh and small twine size would have the potential to capture more marine mammals or sea turtle interactions in the Tom's Cove area that could potentially wash up onto the Chincoteague National Wildlife Refuge there. To prevent this, he suggested establishing mesh size restrictions for individuals harvesting horseshoe crabs. These mesh size restrictions are similar to those from the Harbor Porpoise Take Reduction Plan of the Mid-Atlantic region. FMAC supported this request at the meeting, and because this fishery is mainly executed during the months of April through July every year, they suggested it go to in front of the commission for March for emergency regulations so that something could be in place when the season started in April. At the 2013 meeting, the commission adopted emergency regulations to allow the harvest and possession of horseshoe crabs in gill nets that have a stretch mesh equal to or greater than 6 inches, provided that that twine size is equal to 0.81 millimeters or greater, and that person possesses a valid coastal area striped bass permit or black drum harvesting and selling permit. The public hearing today is to make these emergency regulations part of the final regulation. Since the establishment of those emergency regulations, there have been concerns raised by members of industry about the requirements to have that coastal striped bass permit. There are individuals who have valid Chesapeake Bay striped bass permits that do encounter horseshoe crabs as a bycatch in the bay, and under this current regulation, they would be cut out from harvesting those horseshoe crabs. Because of this, staff is recommending a draft regulation or an amendment to that emergency regulation. This draft regulation would be less restrictive than the emergency regulation that was already established. It would allow any individual who holds a striped bass permit, not just individuals who have a coastal permit, so allow bay and coastal permits to harvest those horseshoe crabs. These changes are on the draft regulation on page 5 of 10 in your packet. This proposal has been advertised in accordance with 28.2-209 of the Code of Virginia for public hearing today. Staff recommends amendments to Chapter 4 VAC 20-900 pertaining to horseshoe crabs to make it unlawful for any person to harvest or possess horseshoe crabs taken by any gill net that has a stretch mesh measure equal to or greater than 6 inches unless the twine size is equal to or greater than 0.81 millimeters in diameter, which is 0.031 inches, and that person possesses his own valid striped bass permit or his own black drum harvesting and selling permit, as well as either a horseshoe crab endorsement license or the horseshoe crab bycatch permit. To date, there has been no written public comments on this issue.
Okay. Any questions of Adam? All right. This is a public hearing. Who wishes to comment? You don't need to explain. We'll take your word for it.
A lot of what I have to say has to do with data from Adam.
What's your name, sir?
Michael Gibson.
Okay.
I was wondering if you have the data. Okay.
You're going to have to stay at the podium, but there's a there is a pointer there, I think, if you want to.
This is a laser pointer. If you can see back that the gillnet fishery basically didn't even exist as of until 2011 when there was a price increase with the horseshoe crabs. And you can see that hand harvesting and pound netting, which hand harvesting is on it right now, but hand harvesting has been steady for 25 years strong or beyond. cow nets, they've been steady, and they do. They're actually more of a bycatch fishery. If you look, they do a little bit here, a little bit there every day, real steady, consistent. And the gill nets, I think they closed down trips. It was 91, I believe, in 2012. It was 9 days, I believe, was when they started fishing to when they stopped. April 20th, and I believe they started harvesting around April 10th. So, I mean, pretty quickly they shut their fishery down. One of our biggest concerns when we had the industry meeting was that they were upset because they had to handle these horseshoe crabs regardless. So everybody in the industry was like, okay, well, they're getting stuck in their nets, so we might as well let them keep them. Everybody kind of felt the same about it. We didn't realize that what we had done is opened up them to create a new fishery, which is now they're targeting horseshoe crabs. And they're fishing in the same locations where hand harvester fish. It's nighttime when we go out fishing for these, and they're dangerous. If there's a swell and you run into a gill net, it can pull your boat down. The weight of the net, and it'll turn you to, you lose power, and the waves will come over the boat. And then the only thing you can do is grab a knife real quick and cut the net. And we don't want to do this. And then we get made out to be the bad guys for cutting a net or destroying fishing gear. These nets were never there before. This is not a traditional black drum rock bass area for fishing. They've never been there. I think there's a few gentlemen here that have been fishing for many, many years, and they could attest to that's not where they fish for drum. They don't fish for rockfish there. So the necessity of it being twine size for drum nets versus rockfish nets, having that license, and also the aging of the bycatch license. If those guys that have a drum permit or a rock permit, but they just so happen don't have a bycatch permit, why not let them borrow somebody's bycatch permit? Unless you're trying to keep the whole fishery to yourself. I mean, because those nets are always going to be there anyways. I mean, let them take the crabs because they're having to handle them also. It seems like if you shut down this, and this, in my opinion, it seems like it only really suits the needs of three people to fish this fishery now. And we thought that everybody was going to catch 50 a day out in the ocean and bring them in. And so we didn't know they were going to target and go in the same location that we go in and get 250 a day to 500 a boat when they license stack on the boat. And what was the other one that I have? The other, did I have any more of those? Mm-hmm. No, that's it? Okay. The nets block off the beach. If you go, we have a map, but they just go right down the beach. And it's fencing, literally fencing off the beach from where these horseshoe crabs crawl up onto the beach. They do their thing, and then they go off into the deep. The only spot where I caught horseshoe crabs last April was where one net stopped and one started. They'd sneak through there somehow. It's a maze of nets out there anymore. I mean, you don't know where they stop. You don't know where they start. You can't find them. There's no reflective tape on anything. It's just a nightmare. And we've done the best to stay away from them because, like I said, we don't want to get in them. But I don't really have the best answer what to do. I mean, abolish it. I don't
abolish
think
what?
Just do away with the bycatch gill net fishery. I don't think it's a fair thing to ask for. But if we could come up with some way to just get these nets out of this area, because like I said, they're not catching drum in these areas. They're not catching rock in this area. What they do in the ocean or elsewhere is fine. I mean, but we just can't have these nets here. We didn't catch our quota for the first time. And I think the previous year we hit our quota in 3 days. We went for, I don't remember, but it was a while last year. It was probably 60 days, I think, at least. I could be wrong, but I know it was well over a month. And I was thinking maybe to keep the nets of possession of horseshoe crabs from the crest of the inlet. So anything outside the ocean they can keep their 250 a day. That inside the crest of the inlet, like if you drew a straight line from the point of the inlet across to, you know, about the point from that area, just do away with the targeting of horseshoe crabs inside of Tom's Cove area and inlet. I understand there's a lot of other fisheries that go on, and a lot of the problems could be solved by saying, okay, you can't anchor the nest overnight. I don't know if that would work because that might affect another fishery that has nothing to do with this. I don't know what the real answer is, but I would like you guys to consider maybe a line that says keep your horseshoe crabs past the crest of the inlet or beyond the bite, and anything inside goes to hand harvesters, basically. Traditionally, we've not had this competition. And I believe that we would have hit our quota last year if this fence wasn't there. And that's all I have to say.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Gibson before he leaves? Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Wimbra. Sure. Okay.
Basically, what Mr. Gibson had brought to you is the problem that we're running into. Traditionally, this was made as a bycatch fishery. It was never meant to be a horseshoe crab fishery. You're not supposed to target horseshoe crabs. That's what happened. We ourselves, we went to an inventory meeting. You'll see a letter on the front page that I've written that explains the whole situation, how everything come about at the harvestry meeting. And we tried to help the Gilnutters out by giving them extra quota, because the first time that we split from a harvestry, from everybody in one category to gillnet, pound net, dredge, trawl, hand harvest, the gillnet and the pound net were in one category as a bycatch. The first year that they did this, they caught their limit, and the pound netters got none. Gill netters caught them all. The pound netters called Mr. Griss and asked for a meeting, which we had. In the meeting, the gill netters wanted more crab, more quota. The pound netters were concerned about that, saying, okay, if they get more quota, because their season starts before us, our nets are anchored. We cannot target horseshoe crab. We're not going to get our fair share before they catch the quota up again. So we branched off and made the gillnet bycatch. We did this, as Mr. Gibson said, make it fair for everybody. They got to handle the crab. It's only right they get to keep some of it. That's what we did it for. We even went ahead and we were supposed to get some of our overages back that year. And I myself said, can we give 15% of these overages from each category to the gillnetters to make it fair for them? That gave them 10,000 crabs or a little more for their quota. What has happened since that point in time is that in 9 days, they've got these crabs. There's basically three or four people targeting these crabs. You got 10,000 crabs, 250 a limit. In 9 days, it doesn't calculate. It just doesn't calculate. They put their nets on the outside to catch the rock and the drum. They swing inside the cove and they catch the rock, their horseshoe crab. And it's easy to see. I've been to Curtis Merritt Harbor. I've watched them bring them in and throw bag after a horseshoe crab. If you're not targeting the horseshoe crab, you wouldn't be catching that many horseshoe crab. It's supposed to be a bycatch. It is not a bycatch. It's being targeted. My other concern, my biggest concern, is that what they've been doing is they've been putting these nets closer to the beach inside Tom's Cove. If you look at the map that you have inside there, you'll see a picture of Tom's Cove with the gill nets. Pretty much everything except by the inlet has a gillnet by it. There are small spaces between them. But these nets aren't marked properly. I've got the regulation, your own regulation in there, tells you how they're supposed to be marked. There's no 2 1-inch strips on the pole or reflective tape. The poles aren't 3 foot above the water lines. The flags are so faded you can't see them. Some nets have double flags, so we can't tell where they start and where they stop. I do not want to hit a gillnet. That's the last thing I want to do. It's going to try to seal my lower prop, and it's going to tear my lower unit up. I don't want that. We want to be able to coexist with these people. But these nets are fencing off our fishery. They go all the way around the cove, and in doing that, the crabs can't make it to shore. When the crabs start to crawl at night, because they're anchoring them at night, they hit these nets, they get caught. What don't get caught goes back out. only place crabs come ashore is between the nets. Now, in saying that, not only is it impeding our viable fishery that's been around for 25 years, but during the month of May, there's a moratorium on this thing, from May 1st till June 7th. This is so the horseshoe crab can make it to the shore, lay their eggs, and the red knot can feed on these eggs when they come across. We all know what a headache that can be. We know what we have to do, go through to get that. These nets are also stopping those crabs from getting to the bank and laying their eggs. If our crabs can't get through in June and these nets are here, these nets are perfectly legal to be there. They just cannot harvest a horseshoe crab. The regulation says it's illegal to harvest a horseshoe crab within 1,000 feet of the mean low tide mark during that time. It doesn't say you can't put the net there. It says you can't harvest a horseshoe crab. So they pull it out, they throw it back over, they put the net right back where it was at. After that crab bounces off that net 4 or 5 times, he's going to go find somewhere else to go to shore. It's not going to be where it's at traditionally, where we've had for all these years. 3 years ago, this was not an issue. We did not have these nets there. I'm not going to say there wasn't a gill net here and there out deep in the cove, way out in the cove, one here, one there. We didn't have any problem running into nets. We didn't have any problem catching our quota. 2 years ago, 3 to 4 days, our quota was caught. Last year, we went for 40 or 50 days and could not catch our quota. And we had more people in the fishery last year than we've ever had yet. And we still could not catch our quota. Because what's happening is they're fencing it off. At the last industry meeting, when they fenced it off, the next thing they do, I think we should get some of the hand harvesters' quota. They didn't make their quota this year. We should get more of their quota. So now they're trying to come in and take our quota that we were generous enough to give them some as it was. But they're trying to take our quota away from us, and it's not right. All we want to do is what we've done in the past with no problems. We've got our industry under control. We were the first ones to step forward with Mr. Gritz and say, hey, I understand you're having a problem projecting your quota. You want to be able to project 85% and know when to cut it back. We want to help. We want to be positive in this fishery. And that's what we did. We're the ones who kind of set this basis that we're going off of. We want to do the same thing here, but we cannot keep a viable fishery going in the hand harvest industry if we keep these nets inside that cove. And I'm telling you, last year there was an anchor on dry sand at low tide. That's how close these nets are to the bank. You're putting a 15-foot net, 12-foot net, in 4 to 5 feet of water at the most. Some of them are in 2 feet of water. They're bagging out. So when your crabs go in, they get stuck. It's illegal to tie one down. But if you put a tall net in a short amount of water, it bags out. It does the same effect. When the crabs get in it, it's not going to straighten back out. They pull it up. They're coming in with 250 with absolutely no problem. You got 3 people who are in this fishery who brought this to you. This has nothing to do with turtles or dolphins. This has nothing to do with it. This is to do with, if we do this, if we get this regulation passed, what's going to happen is, and we'll be able to go out there and we'll be able to catch these 10,000 crabs with the 3 of us, because there's only 2 or 3 people who's got these drum permits and the rock permits and the bycatch permit. Because if you read the regulation, it says they must possess that and their own. So you can't use someone else's. That's where the problem lies. All we're asking is think it through. I personally think that an answer to this question should be that although I'm for adopting this provision, I also think it would work. So if all gill nets left in, no gill nets left in overnight from April 1st to June 1st, I'm sorry, July 1st, left unattended or anchored, they would be able to drop them at dawn, have them back on their net, on their boats by dusk. And so they would still be able to catch their fish. They would still be able to catch their horseshoe crab. But they wouldn't be able to anchor them out overnight. Our crabs crawl at night. Most of them. Not all of them. 90% crawl at night on the bank. So if these nets aren't along the bank, they're not going to impede our fishery. These guys can still gill net. They can still catch their horseshoe crab. But they just have to drop that net at dawn and have it up by dusk. Simple, easy, effective. It works for everybody. I'm sure they're going to come up and say that they don't agree with this, but, you know, again, it's our fishery that we've had for a long time. We're not doing anything wrong. We're doing what we're asked to do, and they're impeding us. We're not impeding them. I'm not saying get rid of the gill net. I don't agree with the way it's become, because it was meant to be a total bycatch fishery. It's one of those things where you're out there targeting black drum or you're out there targeting rockfish, and you have to handle the crab anyway. But if you're going to pass this provision, what's the difference? What is the difference? Because if you're saying you have to handle the horseshoe crab anyway when you're pulling a rock or drum out, now only the people who have a bycatch permit get to keep those horseshoe crabs. The rest of them still have to throw them back. So why is this? Where has this helped us at all? only two or three people are going to keep these horseshoe crabs. Everybody else with drum permits or rock permits who do not have a bycatch permit will not be allowed to keep that crab. They're still going to have to go through the 12-point outer net, but they're going to have to throw it overboard, while the few get to keep it. So what's the point of the bycatch in the first place? It's not working. It's not doing what it's meant to do. Any questions?
Mr. Fox.
When you catch that crab in the gill net, and you've got the bag in the gill net, I understand that. And then if you want to throw it back overboard, is that crab dead?
Most of the time, no. Most of the time, they'll live. Oh, okay. Yeah, most of the time, they'll live. The reason that was done that way was because the mesh size was because there was only a few. If you try to catch a female horseshoe crab, anything under 5 inches is going to crawl over it. The nets are so close together, it's used like a ladder. Okay, this has been tried years in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they went through the larger mesh size. That's what's inside Tom's Cove. There's no drum inside Tom's Cove with any size to them to get caught in a 10-inch net. I see rockfish. We go out. I've been doing this for a long time. We go out, and we're out there with a flashlight, pulling a boat, looking for horseshoe crabs mm-hmm. in water, about knee-deep. As we're looking for them, you'll see rockfish this big. You might see a rockfish this big. Nothing 30 or 40 pounds is going to get caught in a 10.5-inch net. You want those fish? You got to go outside. You got to go off whops or around the bite. You're not going to catch them inside. A small horseshoe crab, a male horseshoe crab, will get hung in that 5-inch mesh.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, it's such a fine mesh, it's going to ball up. It's got all the prongs and points onto it. And to get that out of that mesh, you're going to have to pull it up and probably have to start cutting your net to get it out. One or two fishing, then that's no good. That works fine for guys gill netting. They can use these 10-inch nets, and the mesh is thicker. They get hung in them. They can pull them out in a matter of seconds and drop them in the bottom of the boat. It's not that hard for them to do. But that's why they want anything 6 inches or greater only for them. I agree with that provision. I don't want to endanger any turtles. I'll give you literature on there where it says when the turtles come to nest. I have a friend who's on that, does that for a living, for wallops. And he gave me some literature on it as well. Yes, basically, sir. You know, these, if you fence off this, how are they going to get to shore to lay their eggs? Same with the horseshoe crab.
So, Mr. Wimbrough, you support this change to the regulation?
I do support this change, except for the fact that I feel if we put it in the way it's written as of now, that you have to have your own drum permit, your own bycatch permit, and to be able to do this, that you're limiting it to two or three people, and that's just the reality of it. It's only two or three people going to have all these licenses in this category to make it work. What I say is if you're going to do that, which the reason I support it is because I don't want to see any of the turtles or any of the adults. We don't need that here, and that's what we're trying to avoid. But if we're going to do that, then let's keep it open enough that if someone else is already out there with a drum net or a rockfish net and they don't have a bycatch permit, why shouldn't they be able to catch that horseshoe crab? Because they're doing the same amount of work as the guy with the bycatch permit. The only difference is, they're going to have to throw the crab overboard instead of in the boat. Well, that's not affecting any turtles or any dolphins any more than the other guys. None. Their nets are already there. They just can't keep the horseshoe crab. So I don't want to see any fishery limited to two or three people. It's not fair. I hear full-time watermen, full-time watermen, full-time watermen. Let's give them this, let's give them that. If you want to give it to them, how can any young man ever become a full-time waterman in this fishery when every time something viable comes up, we take it away from them and we give it to full-time watermen who are all over 55 years of age. I'm 46. I'm older. But I'm not old. there are young people trying to get in this fishery, in this industry. Some of them lost their hand harvest last year.
Let me ask you this. If you're not fishing for large striped bass or black drum, why would you be setting a large mesh?
To catch horseshoe crabs.
Gill net.
To target horseshoe crabs. Let me
explain. No, but you said... If we adopt this language, there will only be two or three people who will be eligible.
They are targeting, but what you have to understand is.
Why does this language limit it to two or three people?
Because there's only a few people in the fishery who have a drum permit and a bycatch permit, or a coastal rock permit and a bycatch permit. There's not many people that have both licenses so they can make it. You can still have the 10.5-inch net if you have a drum permit, but you don't have a bycatch. You can still have the 10.5-inch net if you have a coastal rock permit or a rock permit, and you don't have the bycatch permit. But in order to keep the horseshoe crab, you've got to have both. So they're going on the outside in the bite, and they're catching the drum, and they're catching the rockfish. Where the room and where the rockfish are. They're coming back inside the inlet, coming inside the cove, where they've got 10-inch nets spread all over the place where we can't even hardly get to shore. Imagine trying to do that at night with these things improperly marked. And then they're pulling it up, and the only thing they get out is a horseshoe crab. Well, they're allowed. The way the regs were written, they're allowed to do that. It doesn't say they have to come out of the same net. And if they come in, they've already got the rockfish on the boat, so, hey, it's a bycatch. Don't matter, I caught my rockfish outside. It's still a bycatch. I got my rockfish on the boat.
Okay. We have some other questions.
It is an ore up there for the text for black drum harvesting selling or striped bass permit. It's not an and, which we've heard a couple of times. It's not both. It's one or the other.
But we do need the bycatch permit along with that.
Yes.
And in the same name.
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Palmer?
How do you feel about mandating the gill nets being maintained 1,000 feet offshore at least at night?
That would be fine. Inside, and on the inside, that would be great. I mean, that's all we would ask for, 1,000 feet from mean low tide mark in any direction at night. That would work.
Ms. Tankett, you had a question?
No, I just wanted to make sure the picture that he had that he depicted in the Tom's Cove, I mean, the picture you have there, I mean, these nets are...
It's not one or two nets. It's a lot.
But they're just feet off the shore. Is that accurate?
Very, as I said, last year when I was walking, if you look at the back part where it says Tom's Cove, there's a small net in the very end and the second net there. Mm-hmm. The if you're facing the leftward anchor of that, we're walking on water this deep with a flashlight. And the anchor line passes, we have to step over the anchor line, pull the boat over the anchor line, and the anchor's in dry sand. Now, this is at low tide. This is not at high tide. This was at low tide.
So what you're, if I could follow up, so
sure.
What you're essentially saying is this, in its action, there's no bycatch. This is a targeted fishery here.
Exactly what's happening. Exactly. And by doing that, wherever they're doing that, they're impeding our fishery so our crabs can get there along with the make crabs.
Interesting. Thank you.
Anything else?
Who else wishes to be heard? Yes, sir.
Randy Birch, from Chesapeake also. I think Ray's covered it pretty well. I don't have a whole lot to add to it. I've done this all my life. As you all know, Chesapeake is a very small community. All of us know each other. We don't want to keep these boys gill netting from making a living either. We want to try to all get along with each other because we're all in this whole thing together. The man working on the water for a living is becoming almost extinct. these guys gill netting, they're hard workers. They're making an honest living, and we don't want to stop them. We don't want to do anything, you know, to keep them from making a living. Just like we don't want anybody to keep us also from doing the same. Ray's covered it pretty good. This Tom's Cove, you'd have to, the map he showed you, it's not a big body of water compared to the Chesapeake Bay or Delaware or somewhere like that. But it is, of course, a popular place for these horseshoe crabs to lay eggs. As Ray said, I don't want to repeat everything he said, but if you fence this shoreline off within just a matter of literally feet, the turtles, horseshoe crabs, anything uses that beach can't get to it. It's just common sense. We do this at night. I guess y'all's understand that this is done on high tide at night. Some nights it might be 9 o'clock at night. Sometimes it might be 2 o'clock in the morning. But you're right there. Excuse me. You're right there in the middle of the night a lot of times with a light. You got all kinds of things, of course, against you, weather, Mother Nature, the market. Everything seems to be working against you, it appears. It's a real short, the window of making this little hustle is very small. It don't last all summer long. It's just like the black drum, the run black drums or peeler crab run or anything else. It's a small window. You've got such a time. And like I said before, we don't want these gill netters. These guys are, like I said, hard workers. They're in it to make a living like we are. It's just different types of mainly I'm a crabber. I've got a black drum permit. I let my rockfish permit go years ago, which was a mistake evidently, but I don't go in this two foot of water setting black drum nets. Now, I don't know it all. I learn something new every day, but this is not where you harvest black drum. We're usually in about 2 foot of water or less pulling these boats. I have to say that we're the less detrimental to the environment. These are all, we're not using any kind of equipment at all. We're using our bare hands. Pulling a boat along with one hand, reaching down in water 24 inches or less, picking any crabs up by hand. Nobody wants to preserve these horseshoe crabs or anything as far as that goes into this stuff more than we do. This is where we get our electric bill and our highest payment and all next week, next month, next year. And nobody wants to preserve it any more than the watermen. Some people think, you know, all these commercial watermen want to do is rape the bottom, and that's not so. Nobody's more interested in preserving it more than us because, like I say, that's our living for next month and next year. The last few comments about the gillnets and overnight anchored and all, I didn't think that was the worst idea. That's about all I've got to say. I appreciate you all's time, and I hope we can come to a...
Thank you, Mr. Birch.
Thank you.
Any questions? Anyone else? Yes, sir.
How y'all doing today? My name is John Smith. I used to be in the hand harvest industry last year until they had voting and all, and I wasn't qualified for the upcoming year. But as I was hand harvesting crabs, as Mr. Birch and Mr. Wimbrough said, you know, you're walking on the beach trying to pick them up in 2 foot of water or so, and next thing you know, you're tripping over a gill net or the rope or something like that, and my grandfather has been in this industry for over 60-some years, and I've learned some things from him as well about rock fishing and drum fishing and all. They're not inside the cove like they're doing. You know, you're not 2 foot of water. I've been, like Mr. Wimbrough said, you see fish maybe that big, mainly bait fish, you know, they're running after, but the majority of the fish are out in the bait, out in the ocean, you know, out along the break and all in that area. They're not, you know. We never had these problems with gill nets until the past year or two. You know, I wouldn't be afraid to go out and sail anywhere I want to go at night. I've been on the water my whole life, and now all of a sudden, I'm sailing along. I don't know what, I have a 4-5 tubing, a million watts on my boat just to be able to see where I'm sailing, just so I don't tear the men's equipment up that they're fishing with. You know, and now all of a sudden, there they are, here, net here, net here, and you can't even walk for them. If, like I said, if you put them out, middle of the cove. I think the cove is like maybe at the widest point, 1,800 feet at the max, you know. You ain't got very much to sail at night, you know, and be able to do what you need to do. And I hate to see the gillnetters lose their income as well, you know. We all work hard. We all try to get along. Like Mr. Burt said, it's a, you know, it's a small island. And I'm tired of the fussing and fighting and the bickering about this mess, you know. I went in it for about a couple years and been bycatching for a couple years, and that's just all I've been hearing. You know, never time to turn around, we're coming up here to fight over something, you know, just try to stay in the industry, you know. And I wish I could have gotten in the industry for hand harvesting this year, but I still support them, you know, and I hope maybe in the upcoming year something might come up, I could get back in. If not, no big deal, you know, but that was a huge part of my income. But I still, you know, try to oyster, clam, crab, do whatever I can do. But to sum it up, you know, I just think that wouldn't be a bad idea to have your nets be able to, from dusk to dawn, and let them either anchored or drifting, you know. But as far as nighttime, let them on the boat or offshore or something. We don't need them in that cove like that and blocking the crabs coming up and laying their eggs and whatnot. But I appreciate y'all's time. And
if you only allowed gill netting in this fashion during the day, what kind of catches would those nets see?
I would assume you'd be catching menhaden, croaker, spot, trout.
But no horseshoe crab?
Occasional finer that might get hung up in there or something, but that's about it.
You would not catch horseshoe crabs during
the
day?
You might catch a couple, but nowhere near the abundance of, as you can see, the you know, what they had the quota of, it tripled. You know, it went from maybe 100, 200 crabs to 12,000 crabs, you know, 10,000 crabs. Come on. You know, that tells you right there, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's next? Anyone else? Well, wait a minute. We've got another. We'll hear from everybody once, then we'll pick up you again.
Just
have your name.
My name's Aaron Matthews from Trinity, Virginia. I don't think we should cut the guild nut night completely. The simple reason is these horseshoe crabs usually are thicker a week before the full moon, a week after full moon. That's how they operate. Our season, like Mr. Burt said, is maybe 14 days to catch our hand harvest quota. And what's also happening that nobody has said today is our season comes in, what, June 7th? That's 14 days after full moon. I don't think it's right to do anything to Ernie or none of our gill netters, because that's still not helping us. These crabs go with the moon. So, like last season, I don't know that it was all the gill netters why we didn't get our quota. We didn't get our quota is in some years, if you look at that moon and when our season come in, the closer our season comes into that full moon, the better we're going to do. Mr. Ernie will tell you, he knows 3 days before full moon, he's going to catch crabs, am I right? But not as many as when the full moon comes. So we've got to come up with a plan that makes everybody happy, which is hard to do. But what I agree with, I think would help, is 2 weeks before the full moon, can't leave your nets unattended. 2 weeks after the full moon, you can go back to do whatever you want to do. So we're asking for like maybe a 2 week period that, hey, you can't go in there and lace this bank where we harvest our crabs. The turtles crawl up there and lay their eggs. We don't want any issues with that. So that's what we got to do. We got to figure out some kind of way that we make the gill netters happy and we still get to catch our quota. Because that's, I mean, right now our full moon is, what, the 25th of this month? And the crabs have picked up. They went from maybe catching five. The other day, the boy had 370 overnight. All right, that's taken from us because our season's in right now as we speak. They got it laced with nets. I didn't say they're doing anything wrong, but it is hurting us when it gets close to the moon. I would rather them stop a week before full moon and a week after, and then they do whatever they want after that, because really the crabs fall off big time after that moon. So that's all I would add. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who got the 307?
The guy that got that was a man that was leased a bycatch quota.
A gill netter?
He has a drum permit, but he wasn't eligible for a bycatch. So he borrowed somebody's, went out there and called it, come in. So that's how it goes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next. Mr. Bowden.
Ernest Bowden, Eastern Shore Working Watermen Association. And not that I'm bragging, it's probably more complaining. I probably know more about Gilman than everybody else in this room combined. Pete Nixon might come in behind me somewhere, but I started fishing in Tom's Cove in 1967. And there was a comment made earlier that it's not a good place for striped bass fishing or black drum fishing. It is not a very good place for black drum fishing. It's a very good place for striped bass fishing. I'd be more than willing to let Joe go pull my records if you all would like to see them for the last 8 or 10 years where I have caught my striped bass in Tom's Cove. I'm also willing to let you all I will call Master Marine Fisheries Service because under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, I'm required to take observers if you use large mesh nets, which if anybody in the audience wants to use large mesh nets, they need to register with National Marine Fisheries Service underneath the Marine Mammal Protection Act and be willing to carry observers. And if any of y'all want to do it, I'll be more than glad to help you, guide you along the way on that. So not only do I have where I caught my fish, if you want to access the observer data, they'll tell you how big they are. My fish this week have been averaging between 20 and 22 pounds. So they are large fish. Right now I'm still working on stuff that's coming from Delaware and Hudson River because they're full of roe and they're on their way north. And they will start catching them coming out of the Chesapeake Bay after they spawn. As far as people going in the ocean and catching their fish and then coming in and catching horseshoe crabs, I've not seen that. I'm not going to say that it hasn't happened, but it's been relatively minor, and now it cannot happen because you're not allowed to keep any horseshoe crabs outside of coal rags. But really, we're way off track. I want to get us back on track, what we're here to discuss. This other stuff, you know, it may be worthy of discussion, but it doesn't pertain to anything that was covered in this regulation. This regulation was more or less to put us in line with the Marine Mammal Protection Act take reduction plan. Some of you weren't here last month, so I'll give you a little briefing on what it is. We have a take reduction team for every kind of marine mammal, and the state has representatives on it. I'm one of the representatives. Lewis Gillingham is one. I think Alicia has been there. They take and try to, they can't eliminate all takes, so you apply to the National Marine Fisheries Service and you get an exemption, which gives you an incidental take. You still can't target marine mammals, but it relieves you from prosecution. If you do not have this incidental take exemption, even if it's a total accident, they can prosecute you to the fullest. So what, when we were doing these plans, we found out there was a lot of harbor porpoises taken. And it was mostly all by Yankee boats, none by Virginia boat, neither one. But some of them occurred off of Virginia. Even though it was outside of 3 miles, they would be credited to us. The boats were working out of Ocean City, and they were from New Hampshire and Massachusetts. And when we got looking at all the data, we found out from 0.81 millimeters and above, there were zero takes. And that's the reason the Virginia boats and North Carolina boats had no takes, because we all use 0.81 or above. All the Yankee boats used 0.52 to 0.7. They had every one of the takes. So we realized, you know, maybe we're on to something. So they scrutinized the data even more. And from New Jersey on down, it was found out that none of the takes were in heavier webbing. So that's the reason we wanted to go to heavier webbing. Basically, all this is a continuation of the harbor porpoise plan. Right now, we have some leeway because we're inside a call rack. But we don't have as much leeway as you think, because for over 10 years, we've been trying to get the line moved from the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel to call racks. And there's been no movement that I know of unless it's occurred here in the last several weeks. So they're already inside of coal rags. We lost a lot of state waters to this Marine Mammal Protection Act. And it's 5 inches, anything over 5 inches. But I suggest it's 6 inches. That way, if anybody wants to come out in the cove and catch smooth dogfish and stuff that's smaller that they can legally have, it's sizing that they need. Anything you're going to catch in 7 inches and above, you're going to have a straight path permit. It's land. I mean, you can only have a bycatch if you're actually catching something. So, you know, that was our intent here, and people have bycatch permits, and you can catch horseshoe crabs 6-inch net. I've done it many a time. Yeah, and if you use lighter twine, you'll catch even more, because I don't use lighter twine because there would be no need to have two different sets of nets. Use one side of the line and one on the other. So all of us that do it full-time basically have heavier nets. And they could do just as well with them. And like I say, if they want to register with National Marine Fisheries Service, I'll help them. I'll tell them how to do it and stuff. But you know, I'm the most lenient of the people who's really upset over this. I like to see everybody get along, and I really think these boys are really going to need our help because the Park Service and the wildlife people are upset over this horseshoe crab business. And I'm more than willing to work with them and try to help them out on that.
Ernie, let me
ask
you.
The other people want to outlaw horseshoe crabbing altogether in Tom's Cove and just be done with it. And I think last year they're looking at they didn't catch their quota because we caught them. But when we were looking into, like, on hand harvesters, they went back to 2010 maybe or something. You had to have landings before that. And when we looked into that, they found landings of mine back in the 90s. And some, I know Vernon had 12 or 15,000 one year. So, I mean, you just pick those couple years. You can't go by that if you want to go back. Because the way it's worked is when we have market, we can sell them. When we don't have market, we can't. You know, so it's been that way ever since I've done it. And I've caught them for a lot of them for a quarter, a lot more for a quarter than I ever have for $3, I can tell you. So, you know, basically that's where we are. We're just asking to do this, to try to limit any chance of interactions. You can eliminate them, but this was accepted by the federal government as a way to limit the interactions, and that's all we're interested in.
Let me ask you this, Ernie. When this was presented to us last month, it was, as you have said, I think, designed to prevent interactions with marine mammals and turtles, and that was it. That was the issue. This is what was advertised. I haven't heard anybody say that this doesn't solve that problem. But now what's been brought to our attention today is, you know, very much a classic gear conflict between two groups of fishermen, hand harvesters and gill netters who want to be in the same area trying to catch the same crab. So what are your ideas on how we might
really you have another
go about... How can we solve that problem? And I'm not sure we can solve that problem here today, yeah. But what...
You know, I don't... Basically, when they catch their crabs, would be June if they were allowed to do it. I mean May, excuse me. May was when they really do crawl to the beach. But that's the reason May is taken out of the
it's
equation
close.
Because they're
until
spawning and they want to give them a chance to spawn. I don't know. It's just, you know, I'm the main gill netter in there.
Is this something the gill netters and the hand harvesters can sit down together with staff and try to figure something out? Or is everybody very much at odds and the commission's going to have to do this by ourselves?
I catch my rock right now in real shallow water. And the horseshoe crabs have moved away from the beach, but the water's got so cold there. They're in 9 and 10 foot. They're not to the beach. And like Aaron said earlier, full moon to go to the beach. I try to move away from the beach then because I really, they're not the easiest thing in the world on your gear. When you're pulling in with a hydraulic net taker, they get caught under the roller and there's a hole in your net. Can we work out something? If they're interested in trying, I'm interested in trying. And that's all I can tell you. I think, you know, I always make sure June 7th, when the season opens up, I'm gone. Because I'm not saying people cut my nets intentionally, but you're out there at night, very limited visibility. You're working with a flashlight. The nets, even if they're not at that time, I'm smooth dogging and I'm nowhere near the beach. The rock, they're right up after crabs and stuff close to shore. The smooth dog fish usually tend to stay off a little further, but they still have to transit back and forth. So I always make sure I'm gone then, because a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I got demolished one night, and since then, you know, you learn from your mistakes, so I'll make sure I'm gone. I really don't know what to say. It's not something new. I think it was alluded to as new, and nobody over here that I'm aware of said anything about gill nets being cut up and stuff. And really, that was the letters that you received that I saw, and they were talking about aquaculture nets. It had nothing to do with gill nets. The letters that you put up
right.
there said aquaculture
right.
nets. So
right.
it really has nothing to do. I think maybe some of it is just some misunderstandings. But this has nothing to do with gill netters, hand harvesters, limit. This has to do with the Marine Mammal Protection Act and keeping us in compliance and trying to minimize any takes.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Bowden? Mr. Palmer?
Ernie, how do you feel about keeping nets 1,000 feet off the beach at night?
Excuse me, Joe. I can't hear very well.
How do you feel about keeping the nets 1,000 feet off the beach at night?
1,000 feet off the beach at night?
Yes.
Well, it's going to be hard to do in a lot of places because the beach is not 2,000 foot wide. So I don't know how I'd have a 1,200 foot net, 1,000 foot here, 1,000 foot there, and 1,200 foot, that's 3,200 foot. You couldn't do it. And, of course, the suggestion about originally it was 2 weeks before full moon and 2 weeks after. The moon cycle is only 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So that there is, you know, if you're 2 weeks before, 2 weeks after, that's no fishing at all. 1 week before, 1 week after. There's never been a conflict until this year, evidently. And I think a lot of it is because last year they didn't catch their quota. But if 20,000 caused that problem, how about the years when they catch 60,000 hand harvestmen? That problem would have been much worse earlier on than it is now. Last year was the most unusual winter I've seen in my life. It was warm extremely early. The crabs were crawling when I set nets in March. I've never seen that before. This year, the quota is going to be left on the table, most of it. It's not going to be caught. I'm catching more than anybody, and I'm catching probably a third of what I caught last year. And some of the boys caught way more than I did, and like I say, we're not going to catch it. Just the fact that the water's cold, and it's the way it usually is this year. I mean, it's a little bit colder now, but we're more into a normal cycle than we were last year. Last year was the warmest winter on record. Crabs crawled early. They spawned early, and then they leave. They go out in the ocean after they spawn, and I think that's really what hurt these boys is the crabs actually spawned early and left.
How close to the beach are you now?
Very close. 3 foot of water. I would say probably 3 foot. Now, that's one end. They'll go off. But a lot of times, within that 100 foot of the beach, probably be half of my catch. Like I say, early on, they're coming in. The shallow water warms up quicker. The crabs, if they feed on crabs, straight bass do. So they're up there along the edge of the shoreline. But there's no crabs for them to harvest. They could go out there, you know, and just the water's too cold. They're just not there. They're in like 9 and 10 foot of water.
Any other questions? Ms. Haney.
I don't know how large of an area Times Cove is, but what if there was a distance requirement?
They know I can't hear.
I don't know how large of an area Times Cove is, but what if there was a distance requirement between the nets?
Is there a distance requirement between nets of 300 feet?
It's our, if that.
Which sounds like a lot, but it's very little on the water.
It just looks like, of course, it's not drawing to scale, but it just looks like they're side by side, but there's actually 300 feet in between each net.
Right.
Okay.
That's a current statutory
amount. I've had the privilege of seeing the picture, so I really can't.
And that's just a hand drawing to illustrate what the gentleman saw. Any other questions for Ernie?
The nets are parallel to the beach or perpendicular to the beach?
Parallel.
Parallel, like the picture shows.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ernie. Any last comments? Mr. Nixon, and then we'll come back to you, Mr. Gibson.
I'm Peter Nixon. I'm president of the Junior City Council. Mr. Commissioner, you probably remember this. You and I are the only ones who were around back then when Bob Perkey brought an issue in front of the legislature back in the 80s sometimes about the game refuge south of Sandbridge in Virginia Beach. There was a fellow down there. It was Gil Minton. Right on the shore off Sandbridge, and he was so close that some of the folks in the summertime, they were worried about their children getting tangled up in the gill nets. And the game refuge was concerned about turtles coming ashore and nesting in the summertime. And we came to a compromise in the legislature about a certain distance nets could be offshore, and they had to have a certain number of feet in between either end, as you were alluding to let the turtles come ashore and to have them far enough offshore that they wouldn't get involved with swimmers. Maybe something like that could be done here to solve that same problem. Not the same dimensions,
right,
but something similar.
Yep. Mr. Gibson, This will be the last comment, folks. And we're going to bring it to the commission.
Pardon me?
Go ahead.
Well, if we could switch them back to the last data. Sorry about that.
Ryan, the commission, this is in pounds, not number of crabs.
There has been an open market for horseshoe crabs forever. You can take them right off the island, drop them off, and sell them within just a few miles of Schenectady. It's always been there. The guy always pays a fair price. He's always buying. If that was the case, in 2010, they have 500. Now, you said that's in pounds? And what would they equate that? What do you guys consider a horseshoe crab? 2.5 pounds? About 4 pounds? So how many crabs is that actually?
200
and
2 pounds.
For 2 pounds? So that would be like
250 crabs.
So they actually only caught 250 crabs in 2010. And then this. I think that right there speaks. There's always been a market. Always. And they weren't keeping them. They never kept them up until this, until it was $3. That's when they decided they wanted to put their nets on the beach because it was worth it. These horseshoe crabs are horrendous to gear. You don't want to put your gill nets there. What they do is they take their older gill nets and put them there because they're going to tear them all up. They get all wrapped in there. You got to pull them out. It's horrible. But I think maybe 500 feet from the beach if they're going to anchor them. And maybe a 500 or a 250 gap, or well, no, a 500 gap, or something to just limit the number of nets. And we all know it's not all Ernie's nets out there. It's, you know, multiple people, but there's a lot of them. I mean, there's a lot of nets out there.
Mr. Gibson, would you be willing to sit down with the gill netters and try to come up with a solution to this gear conflict?
Every one of us who's here, we all have bycatch permits. I'm willing to give up mine. I have no interest in gill netters. I'm a hand harvester. Gill nets are in the way. It's for the best of the fishery, just for me to remain a hand harvester. I don't need to double dip and get into this and that and that. We could set gill nets, but we don't want to. And there's reasons why we don't want to, but we just don't want to. So I think it'd be best for the sake of everybody just to solve it now. We might have missed what we were supposed to do with the public comment. Maybe we could have asked for an emergency regulation. I'm not sure if we can actually add something to this now to say, can we actually do the 500 feet or the 1,000 feet now?
See, that's the problem.
Yeah,
we're doing is reconsidering to make permanent an emergency regulation. So we, you know, most of the suggestions that have been made here today are outside of the scope of the public comment.
I would like to
and
ask,
the advertisement.
I'd like to ask the commission if you guys could reconsider asking for a public comment so we can ask for emergency regulation. We drove a long way. We really need these nets off beach. I mean, I'm not saying shut it down. I don't have all the answers, but if Ernie would agree to 500 feet, I think that's fair. I mean, they can keep them anchored. And we're just talking about horseshoe crabs. We're not talking about fin fish or anything else. If they're setting a croaker net or something in July, we're just talking about specifically targeting horseshoe crabs. We're not talking about croaker or spot or anything. If those nets are about, we know where those locations are that gentlemen set those nets, and we avoid those areas. So we're not talking about those nets. We're pretty much just talking horseshoe crabs. So those nets need to get away. I mean, you've heard 3 feet of water. I've never seen them out there. I've been doing this for right around 10 years, and they've never been there. So, I mean.
Okay. So, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Public hearing is closed. Staff have some additional comments.
Thank you. And the commission should know that there's already a plan underway. There have been, I believe, 3 meetings with the horseshoe crab industry members, usually in the fall. And last year's meeting started out fairly confusing in November. The hand harvesters had a proposal, which eventually was successful, to limit the number of permits. And the commission may remember when that came before you. At the same time, the reason the meeting started out confusing a little bit, others in industry were wondering, were we talking about limited entry, not just staff, but everyone there, the combined group there, for everything. And the types of things we saw that night were overcapacity, which still hasn't been addressed. The hand harvesters did address that. But in other gears, you may have 20 eligible permittees. And in the case of the trawl, for example, only one or two have been actively fishing. The dredge, same amount. There have been, I think, five that have been actively fishing. So there's certainly a lot to take care of. What we ended up with in that meeting last year was that we could not, as a staff, wait until this fall, late fall, and simply have another free-for-all and try and figure something out. Instead, we would work on a survey for them, which would address many of the issues that you face as a commission, and we would have the industry provide that feedback before we meet again. There's misalignments of permits. You just heard just this very moment about the idea of those who have the bycatch permit, they've got the hand harvester permit. If you're in the other, you can have the, you can go gill netting, you can have the bycatch. There's work to be done there that might help the situation. Staff is not indicating that there haven't been problems raised here. It just seems that if you do wish to advertise for a public hearing, which would be a month subsequent to May, because if the commission thought they would have passed an emergency regulation at the May meeting, it's June, late in June, I'm not sure the exact date, when that would be up for a public hearing. By that time, much of the issue that you're hearing today is not there. And secondly, if everyone doesn't meet together and try and give a little bit and iron things out, then likely the commission goes through an emergency regulation process. Staff will advertise that for a public hearing. At the public hearing, it could end up it fizzles out anyway. The hand harvesters haven't gained. The gill netters haven't gained. So I just wanted to make you aware that we have been planning since last meeting, and it is underway, that survey will go out to everyone in industry, and I think that'll help. And I think our next meeting, which I believe is the fourth meeting, and the commissioners attended two of those in the past, I think, will be more constructive. And the way those meetings usually progress, in the beginning, there really is a lot of confusion. It can be a little bit of back and forth among the group, but eventually there's some pretty good dialogues. And I think that occurred last meeting as well. So if that helps at all in your decisions that you've been asked for today, the primary request is the staff recommendation that you see before you. And these other items are something for you to think about, whether to do something for next month by emergency or, given the timing, let the next industry-based meeting take place, and then we go forward.
How quickly could you have another industry meeting?
I would think October would be about the time to do it, only because you're in a lull period after you get through into the summertime anyway, but we could certainly speed that up. There's no reason we couldn't speed that up. It's just that when you do a mail-out, a mass mail-out like that, and then you wait for responses to come in, you figure out what the responses are. Very similar to what was just done recently for these sanctions and violations that we went through. But, I mean, we're open to suggestions from the commission. We could turn it around with or without the survey. That's one option, or we could have the survey out in not too long from now and then go from there and set an earlier date than October as well.
All right. The public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission. Mr. Tank.
Interesting testimony today. I mean, I think we've got two issues at hand. First, I think we ought to perhaps decide on our, the regulation that's before us and do that, and then maybe we need to have some discussion. I think it's concerning that you have a bycatch industry, or would it, a bycatch fishery that has become a bycatch industry, where a targeted industry, targeted fishery. So things have gotten confused in a way, and that seems to be, as far as I can tell from the testimony from the different individuals from Chincoteague, is that that's hurt their primary fishery. So in some ways, as long as I've been on the commission, this seems like more of an emergency to a current fishery than any time I've seen an emergency. And I know it's kind of perverse in a way. Oftentimes we're asked for people from the James River want to extend a oyster season, but here we've got a fishery that's asking relief from a bycatch fishery that's adversely impacting their fishery. I've never seen anything quite like this before.
It's very much a classic gear conflict that appears to have developed in the last couple of years.
But there doesn't seem to be any opposition in the group to what we are trying to do.
Here. I agree. Right. I didn't hear any opposition to that.
Right.
But it doesn't solve the gear conflict. It
doesn't address that at all.
So, I think to make things a little bit simpler, why don't we, let me ask for a motion on the proposed amendments to Regulation 900. Let's get that out of the way.
I'll move to approve that staff recommendation on the permit.
Second that.
Seconded by Mr. Fox. Is there any discussion on that item? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries, and those amendments are approved. Now, on the issue of the gear conflict, I think you have a number of choices there. I think and not all of which solve the problem this year. You could adopt another emergency here today that contains some measure that will affect this situation. You'd have to hold another public hearing on that to make it permanent next month.
Right.
You could not do anything here today and ask for a quick meeting of the industry members that are involved in this conflict and see if they can't work something out. That puts it off a month, obviously.
Right.
And then come back, next month and adopt that by emergency and ultimately make it permanent. I'm sorry this didn't come to our attention, last fall. It apparently occurred last year as well, but we're just now sort of finding out about it.
Conflict time is early June. Is that when the conflict occurs? That's what I heard.
That's what I understand.
Now, it's before May 1.
Before
and
May
after 1. June 7, right? So there's a closed season of May 1 to June 7, during which you can't be near the beach. So it's before that and after that, I guess, where the conflicts.
They're going on for 2-3 weeks, and then it's going to continue on for another week and a half.
Mr. Chairman, I'm new on the commission and not real knowledgeable in what they're talking about, but it sounds to me like here today that if they could work something out that maybe a week before full moon and a week after full moon, that the crabbers could have more access, would that work? I don't know whether that's in the scheme of things or not. Does that make sense?
I like the idea of getting these folks together to see if they can come up with their own solution. I know it doesn't solve the problem for the next 2 weeks for them.
Right.
But, we're limited in what we can do under the law, and we haven't heard all the solutions. And my concern is if we act here today quickly, we may do something unintended consequences, and that's what I want to avoid.
We also have some due process problems if we try to do something outside of what's been advertised.
Right.
Well, then based on that, the course would be to ask them to get together with some representation of staff there to listen.
Yep.
And if they can come to some form of an agreement, we can address it
next
at
month.
The next meeting and on an emergency basis.
Yeah.
And then act on it finally at a future meeting.
Yeah.
Next month.
Yeah.
And would that cover your due process?
Yes, sir. I'm just talking about doing something today. I thought it was been advertised.
Right.
We can't do that.
We can't do that.
Any comments on Mr. Fox's suggestion or any other suggestion?
I certainly understand what Mr. Fox is saying. I just think when you remind yourself, we remind ourselves that this is a bycatch fishery that's impeding the normal fishery, the sort of perversity of it that plays out. It seems as though it's something we should move on because it is date and time sensitive. But I do not know how we can move under current regulations.
Let me ask the staff a question about, is the gillnet fishery by regulation a bycatch only fishery?
It
receives an allocation of the quota. It's under the combined gear.
The other category.
But is there anything that says this is intended only as bycatch? You can't direct on horseshoe crabs with a gillnet?
Not specifically that I know of.
So in that sense, it's no different than a trawl or a dredge or a pound net.
Their trip limit is the least of everything. They have a very specific daytime-only trip limit of 250 crabs.
Right.
And that's the only note to that gear.
But there's nothing in current regulations that say if you're using a gill net, you cannot target horseshoe crabs. You cannot direct on horseshoe crabs.
No. And the reason...
You're just limited to the 250 a day.
And the 250 was a concession to more or less... as a bycatch. So that was an industry proposal, the way that went.
It was designed to have the fishery last as long over a period of time as possible.
And during actually one of those annual industry meetings.
Right, one of those fall meetings.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
Finish your thought there. Did you all have something else?
Nope. Not right now. Thank you.
It would seem to me if we would encourage them to get together.
You want to make that a motion?
And if they don't get together,
we will.
Nothing happens.
Either that or we'll take our own action.
Yeah. I'll be glad to make a motion, but I'm not exactly sure what the motion should be, except we would encourage them to get together and between now and our next meeting with staff participation. And they would, the results of that meeting would be presented to us at our meeting in May.
Unless I hear a motion from another member, a different course, then that's what I would propose we do. So let me ask if there's a motion that would take us in a different direction. Mr. Palmer.
I'd still like to make a motion to pull the nets from... dusk until dawn, 1,000 feet off the beach. So you guys could get in here. But I don't know if that would float with due process.
The rights have to be advertised, too. Then we cannot get around the advertisement. There's nothing we can do today that hasn't been advertised.
Well, I thought the purpose of an emergency was that you didn't have to advertise until 30 days after the adoption.
What page are you on there? It's page 40, 28.2.210. If in an emergency the adoption of regulation is necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, et cetera, the commission may promulgate the necessary regulation. The regulation shall be published and filed as prescribed in 28.2-209, which is a publication of proposed regulations. No regulation adopted is an emergency. Oh. So you could adopt the emergency and then publish it. I see what you're saying.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Council stands corrected.
So, Mr. Palmer, you made a motion. Can you repeat that?
Motion would be to keep gill nets off the beach from dusk until dawn, 1,000 feet off the beach.
And this is this statewide? Is this Tom's Cove?
Tom's Cove.
Tom's Cove. Yes. Off the beach, dusk till dawn.
At night. Be off the beach at night.
At least 1,000 feet.
Yes.
All right. Is there a second to that motion? Mr. Chang.
I would like to make a friendly amendment to that motion, if I could. I'm in order. And I would say, given my limited exposure to Tom's Cove, is that 1,000 for that small body of water is probably too much. And if we could go to 500, dusk to dawn.
I'll accept.
All right, so the motion is, this is an emergency regulation to keep gillnets in Tom's Cove off the beach at least 500 feet from dusk to dawn.
Mean low water.
Now, do we have any gaps between the nets?
That's already provided for in statute. Yes.
Okay.
And on the basis of the emergency is promotion of public peace. I want to make sure the record's clear on what the basis for the emergency is, because yep. Anybody gets a...
Anyone wish to make a statement as to the basis of the emergency?
It sounds like a gear conflict like this. There could be problems somewhere along the line. I'd rather settle a problem here than have somebody settle it on the dock.
And it's public peace.
Public peace. I thought that's what it was, but I just want to make sure the record was clear.
And I'd say follow along those. I mean, you again, I have to keep things simple for me, is that we're preserving the integrity of a long-term industry, of the primary long-term industry, which is the handheld fishery.
All right. Other comments on the motion, Mr. Fox?
Are we also encouraging the meeting to have a more permanent resolution?
I think what will happen is if this motion is adopted, we should still encourage industry to meet. We've got to come back next month, this being an emergency, hold a public hearing in order to make it permanent or to allow it to
change it,
to disappear or change it to something else. So I suspect you're going to have all these folks will be back next month, maybe with better ideas or at least other ideas.
Mr. Commissioner,
may I
address the motion?
Just a minute, Ernie.
I don't know if maybe you just want to limit the motion for the meeting just to have staff come back and report if there is any meeting, what happened at the meeting with the compromises, or that's something you have control over as opposed to get together. I don't know, it's just a thought.
Yeah, I think we don't have any control over it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So if you have a motion and you pass, there's nothing, no jurisdiction really enforcefully acted on. The only party you have control over is the city. So you know, have required staff to report back to see if there is a meeting in
direct.
If you're going to have a motion, I'm just
saying. I think we just let that go.
Okay. I mean,
All right. So the motion, everyone understands the motion? Do you want to hear any more public comment on this before we vote?
I'm willing to listen to Mr. Bowden.
Sure. I respect Mr. Bowden enough that I'd like to hear his comments.
Mr. Bowden?
I don't. Mr. Ernest Bowden, Asian Shore Warming Association. I don't see where there's an emergency because nobody can keep horseshoe crabs within 7 days. To start with, May 1st, you can't have them if you're within 1,000 foot. Basically, this just eliminates much late bass season. If that's really what you all want to do, you're doing a fairly good job of it. And I would ask right now that I want a formal hearing at next month when we have, when you consider this, if you do pass this, because I'm certainly entitled to that.
Well, there'll be a hearing.
Oh, he's asking for a formal hearing.
I don't, you know, I've been doing this all my life. My family lived on Chincoteague since in the 1700s. We've never had any problems. I don't understand why all of a sudden we have a problem. If the 20,000, you know, we came to the commission and asked them to drop it from 500 to 250. We're willing to make it lower than that. You know, we're willing to do that. We're willing to say June 7th, nothing over 3 or 4 inches, whatever you would use for spot fishing, would be allowed in the code. We'd be willing to, I mean, there's things we can work on. But to eliminate my striped bass fishery under emergency regulation and nobody even get to discuss anything, and not just me, you're talking several other people too, that, you know, I'm a full-time working waterman, and this is my main source of income. April and May is over half of my year, and that comes out of Tom's Cove. It doesn't come from anywhere else. They can allude that it comes from the ocean, and I sneak in Tom's Cove and stuff, but you're not going in the ocean in a 20-foot skiff very often. You do sometimes, but it's not very often. This is just going to eliminate my fishery. And it's going to eliminate 3 other people that I know of right off the bat. And for what? You know, we're being punished for something we haven't done. It is a bycatch. If you would look back further in the records, you'll see for years, 2010, we had no market. We sold to Mr. Robbins. If he was here, he would tell you the same thing. He didn't buy them. He said he was going to buy from the hand harvesters, but he didn't buy from any dredgers, and he didn't buy from any gill netters. So that's the reason 2010 there is no catch. If you can't sell them, there's no need in catching them. You know, the 500-foot stuff is ridiculous. I'd rather throw all the crabs back and totally outlaw horseshoe crabbing than Tom's Cove. I mean, I'd be willing to do that. We're talking about the tail wagging the dog. This is probably 6 or 7% of my income going to knock out the other. It's no way I could stand for it. You know, it doesn't make sense. If there's a conflict, we can work on it, and that's the way it should have been done. There's no emergency exists because it's 7 days, the season closes anyway, and by the time the regulation got signed and made notice, the season's pretty well over with. May 1st, you're restricted to 1,000 foot of keeping horseshoe crab.
Mr. Commissioner?
That's where I catch much striped bass within 1,000 foot. So you're eliminating the striped bass.
Is there a chance we could have Mr. Bowden and the rest of the hand harvesters go into the conference room and try to work something out before this meeting ends?
You know, I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm willing to throw all the crabs back and stay within where I am now.
They're willing to. Ernie, I don't know if you heard what I said. I know. I could yell it to you. The hand harvesters are willing to go back in the conference room and talk with you and try to work something out before this meeting ends. And if that's the case, I will withdraw my motion and see if we can't come up with something that's viable to everybody.
I'm willing to do it, but the sad thing is I'm the only one here.
That's okay.
We weren't addressing any of this.
But you said there were only 3 or 4 people doing it anyway, so you're a third of the population.
Yeah, I'm a fourth, but still. I mean, I am willing to discuss things. I said earlier I was willing to discuss things. If they wanted to get on that, I'd help them get permits and stuff. I don't have much more one of them.
Mr. Beck?
You made the comment you'd throw the crabs back, correct?
We'd have to start May 1st anyway if we're within 5 minutes.
I saw some nods back here saying they might agree to that, so you all ought to talk.
There you go. So why don't you guys go and have a small conference for a half hour or so and see if you can't work something out. Like I said, if that's the case, I will withdraw my motion if you could work something out that's viable for everybody. I don't want to see anybody
hurt
in this.
Mr. Fox?
I think we've got a difficulty here that we are perhaps going to take a decision that be the an expedient one and maybe not the right one.
I agree with you.
If they're willing to go off and talk, let them go talk and see if they come back with something that everybody can agree to.
Yeah.
And if they can't, I suggest that maybe moving forward with doing nothing for the month, but encouraging them to get together and come back with a thoughtful solution.
Unless there's objection, I want to move on to another agenda item. If you all want to meet in the conference room here and come back to us before we adjourn, we'll consider what you have to say. Otherwise
the motion stands.
We'll wait until next month or we'll vote on the motion. But we'll give you all that opportunity to talk. And we're going to
I think it's about 8 against 1.
We'll come back to this item.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity.